Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's talk money this morning. Baby boomers make up, what's the percentage of baby boomers, Cyrus?
Well, it depends on which survey you look at, but you
There's a
know,
lot of us. We know that much.
that's an understatement, dear.
And baby boomers make up such a huge amount of people because there are a lot of us. There's the rest of us who are just getting ready to retire. I'm in that area now. Well, I got like 15 years, but getting ready to retire. And I'm thinking about how do I retire with more of my money? So Cyrus Hancock, our wealth expert, joins us this morning. He's CEO of Hancock Wealth Management. And we're going to talk about how to retire with more money, how to keep your money when you retire. Hopefully you're making great money now. And if you're not, there's still an opportunity to get it done, you know, to get some of that done. Cyrus, a lot of us baby boomers.
Well, good morning, Twana. Thank you once again for having me. There are a lot of baby boomers. You know, let's just say approximately 26% of the population. That's a quarter. That's a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, once again, give and take north and south of 26% mm-hmm. are baby boomers. And 40% of the baby boomers pretty much make up the economy.
Yeah.
Now, you know, part of the concern with retirement is because the baby boomer generation had paid in so much into Social Security that the generation prior to them were able to retire with strong Social Security benefits. Mm-hmm. Because once again, a quarter of the population were paying into Social Security at a very high rate. Now that quarter of the population is retiring, and there's not enough people paying into Social Security to say Social Security is going to be the stronghold of our retirement and retirement income.
If you want to live in a box, you can, but
right.
You better have something else going on.
You better have something else. And how do we have that conversation? What does it look like? Well, that conversation has to start with budgeting. You know, and that's mm-hmm. We've had that conversation on probably 50 times on your show.
At least.
At least, right? And budgeting is extremely important because it allows you to take control of your finances opposed to your finances continuously taking control of you.
Absolutely.
Which is what happens to the majority of us,
mm-hmm.
not only us as African Americans, but Americans and the world. You know, so when you create a budget, there has to be line items. You know, and so someone said to me once, a colleague said to me once, he says, when you're having the conversation of budgeting, it's like having the conversation of dieting. You see, because all you're saying to the person is what you can't eat,
right.
What you can't spend.
Womp, 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 womp,
right?
Womp. Yeah.
And that's exactly how it comes out to you. Womp, womp, womp. Watching Charlie Brown.
Yes.
Well,
oh,
the piece to budgeting that I've learned over the past 6-7 years is you have to create your budget, but within the budget, there has to be something that's called impulsive spending that allows you to set aside this X number of dollars, allows you to spend during those compulsive habit or those compulsive moments, because most of our budgets are erupted because of those compulsive spending habits. You paid your essential bills for the month, mortgage, rent, utilities, whatever, car notes, automobile insurance, et cetera, and you get that out of the way. But then you look around and you're saying to myself, okay, took care of those essential costs. Why am I in a deficit and it's only 4 days after I've gotten paid?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, the issue probably was you went into some store, you saw something that you would like to have,
mm-hmm.
and it moved you. So with it moving you because you really liked it, you just bought it.
Wow.
Right? So what happens is when you create the budget for your tithes, your offerings, for your essential spending, you know, which is your day-to-day cost of living expenses, then you got to create something for emergency reserves. Then you have to create that compulsive spending bucket as well. Well, that compulsive spending bucket is what is going to give you is what's going to give you the ability to make those purchases that you and I and the rest of America sometimes get caught up in the moment acquiring, which interrupts your budget. Well, if you do that consistently, what normally happens? There's never any opportunity to save.
Mm-mm.
Right?
Just won't
because
have
you
enough.
Always have. Yeah. I came in this business 16 years ago, and my mentor said to me at that point, your job is to educate, 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 and teach individuals how to learn to have more money than month. Right now, we're all living more month than money.
Yeah, yeah. So as I was looking at this, it said that to spend 50% on the necessities, that's your mortgage, all your bills, all that stuff, 30% on expendable income. Is that the go shopping money there at the 30%? And then 20% for your savings.
That is the go shopping money. I think that's a little high.
You think that's high?
Honestly,
I think that's
high,
too. 30%, that's a lot of money.
30% is a little high.
Yeah.
But once again, they did obviously carve that piece out from your reading.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we like to do is we have to create what we call pockets or buckets.
Right.
You can create buckets of money for retirement, and I call them buckets because it's like you pick that bucket up and you begin this stream that's flowing on you over a period of time to receive income. Well, we want to do the same thing with budgets. So we want to create these, you know, this pocket to carve out that you put money into to help create and plan and pay for your expenses. Within that, we will have a little bit more allocated in certain areas. However, you're right. It says 30%. I like that to be more along the lines of 20%. Why are you saying 20? Because there's something that's called house maintenance and automobile maintenance, right?
Yes.
That gets us in trouble with credit cards, right? So if you don't prepare to have those dollars set aside, then we do have to use credit cards. Now, it's fine if we can pay the credit more than the minimum payment on credit cards, but when we get caught only paying the minimum, we end up paying an enormous amount for those repairs. So we like to create more pockets than that, than those that were listed, but that is correct. We want 50%, and some people may think that's high, because when you look at mortgages, they like to try to say, you know, around 30-35%. When you're looking to purchase a home, there are some lenders that allow you to go a little bit higher than that. But it is roughly more on the lines of 50% of your income is going to probably cover your day-to-day expenditures.
Right, right.
And then, you know, the 20% that we set aside for that compulsive spending, you know, 10% for those maintenance needs is going to arise for homes or automobiles. And then, once again, your 20% for your savings. Now, personally, as a planner, in my professional opinion, the 20% for your savings goes first.
Okay.
We have to learn how to pay ourselves first.
Mm-hmm.
Then when we pay ourselves first, the next line item should be your day-to-day expenditures. That's that 50%, right? Then you come down to your 10% maintenance reserves. Then you have whatever you have remaining for the compulsive spending, right? Now you become financially healthy. So it kind of goes back to dieting. Don't tell me what I can't eat. Tell me what I can't eat that's healthy, that's going to help my metabolism increase, help me burn calories.
Mm-hmm.
And not tell me I can't eat, you know, French fries, which I unfortunately happen to love.
Honey buns.
Yeah. You can't eat those. Well, give me an alternative. Tell me I can eat sweet potato fries. And instead, give me an alternative.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And that's what budgeting is. And it is the complete necessity to financial peace and financial independence.
You know, it really is. I tell you, I am not happy when my bills are not paid for me.
Absolutely.
For
Absolutely
me.
Not.
And I won't spend a dime. If you look at my bank account, it will probably, only things you will see on there maybe is a Walmart for groceries, but all of the rest of it is gas. But I don't,
right.
I don't spend money doing anything else. So when once we get that 20% every month, where do we put that?
That 20% needs to be in a liquid account. What does liquid mean? Liquid means it's an account that you can access immediately.
Mm-hmm.
There are no contingencies upon you receiving that money. So it needs to be more in a bank account. That could be a money market account. That could just be a traditional savings account. Not a CD, not any bond, anything. It needs to be a liquid account.
Why not those things? Not a CD or a bond. Why not those things?
Well, because a CD is going to put stipulations on when you are able to receive those funds.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a 6-month CD. It may be a year CD. It may be 3-year, 5-year CD. So you can't, if you obtain those funds prior to the maturity of that CD, you're going to pay a fee for that.
Right. Huge fee, right? Most times, yeah.
And in some cases, it could be quite significant.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, well, you're saying bonds. Well, bonds are a safe investment, But you're going to have to make a phone call in most cases to have those funds sent to you if you want them dispersed from a bond fund. Mm-hmm. And in some bonds, you know, you got to obviously put them on the market so someone can – a bond is a loan. Mm-hmm. You're loaning to either an entity, a corporate entity, or a municipality entity of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those bonds have to basically be, you know, cashed in to those that you loan the money to, for lack of better terms, and they repay you what you loan them plus what interest that they may have promised. And you could lose interest because, once again, if you are pulling money out of a bond prior to its maturity, you could lose some interest as well.
And you think about sometimes if you have an emergency, that emergency is today, not
it's
2 days, not, you know, not when they can get you the money. That may be too late.
Maybe too late, which is exactly my point. I'm glad you raised that point. So therefore, with that statement, you need to have immediate access to those funds.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually transfer it from your money market account into your checking account, and you can now at this point utilize your checking account, swipe your debit card, or with the money market account, you know, if it's something you need to pay online, you can just use the routing and the account number of the money market account and have those funds pay for whatever the expenditures are.
Right.
So that's the purpose of making sure those funds are liquid.
So how do we maximize our savings, as it were? And so this is separate from having that in your, you know, at your disposal. So what about the other savings? How do we maximize from our savings plans, like my 401k?
Yes. Every individual, at the sound of my voice, if you are employed for a entity, and that's a corporate entity or a municipality, you should be participating in your 401k, your 401a, your 403b,
mm-hmm.
your 457 plan. If you are at a municipality or a nonprofit, you should be participating. Why? Because you're going to put away money that's pre-taxed. Therefore, your net income, which is your take-home pay, you're not going to see a significant decrease in your net income because the money is pre-taxed. Therefore, when you are receiving a net, that piece that was already taken for your contribution is not taxed. So you're not going to be seeing, if you put in $75, let's just use that number. If you put in $75 a month, that may have a $10 effect, net income effect on your pay.
Mm-hmm.
$10,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
However, when you look at the real value now, opposed to you, let's say if you were putting away the same $75, your income, because of the money you're putting into the plan, now your total compensation may go up $95 or $100 because you put the $75 in plus the interest that you receive. Now you have far more money than you even earned in the first place. Now, if your employer is matching, let's say your employer is matching.
It's even better.
That's even better.
Mm-hmm.
If you're putting in $75, okay, and let's say the employer is matching, you know, dollar for dollar up to 3%, right? If you're putting in $75, I don't know what your 3% was, but if you're putting in $75, in most cases, you will get exactly $75 match from the employer because that's more than most people who are eligible to participate. That's less than 3% of their income by far,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So think about it this way. You and I are friends. If I said, Twanda, every time you see me, if you show me a $100 bill, I would give you $100. I don't know about you.
I'd be trying to see you.
I love you. I love your husband. I love your mother. But I'm going to come see you every day.
That's right. That's
I'm
right.
Call your mom and say, where's Twanda today? You will never escape me, ever. And I'm going to use the same $100 bill just because I don't have to have more. And that's how a match works,
yeah.
in essence.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Every time you contribute, they're giving you money that's free. Yes, there's a vesting period in most cases. An investing period means you have to be there for X number
right.
of years before you're entitled to walk away with what they have contributed
mm-hmm.
for you, which
mm-hmm.
is the match. What you contributed, which is the deferral, that's all yours. But the match, there may be a vesting period. It may be a 5-year vesting period. So in the 6th year, you're entitled to it all, which means in year 1, you get 20% of their match. Year 2, you get 40%. Year 3, 30%. I'm sorry, 60%. Year 4, 80%. Year 5, 100%. So in year 6, all of it's yours. From that point on, every contribution that is made by the employer as a match is yours. But that's the way to maximize your savings from the retirement a qualified plan perspective, because you're putting away money pre-tax, therefore your net income is minimally affected. And I truly mean minimally affected.
That's true.
Then you obviously will earn interest on the money that you're setting aside. And if you're getting a match from your employer, you're even getting free money for your service to be contributed for you as well.
Let's say, even if it's a small amount, just start. If you're eligible, just start. A little bit, small amount. You'll be surprised when you get those statements, how much money you've put in and saved to this point, and don't touch it, you know?
That's correct. And if you do not work for a entity that offers a 401k, contribute to an IRA. You know, an IRA has the same benefits as a 401k, except there are no matching opportunities. However, you have access to, you know, probably an even better, in most cases, investment platform, and you have professional advice in a IRA, because you're going to be working with the financial advisor one-on-one. In your 401k, it's not. It's a group. As a website, you can go to, a couple phone calls you can make, but it's not a one-on-one planning situation as an IRA. But you can make the same contributions into your IRA as you can into your 401k. Now, 401k allows you to put in, you know, in the upwards of $17,000. However, the IRA is going to let you put in, you know, around $6,000. So you can't put in as much. Nevertheless, they're both pre-taxed. Well, I'm sorry, they're both tax-deductible. So the 401k is pre-taxed. The IRA, you'll get the money back on the back end, because you're going to get a tax deduction for it.
What happens at job changes? I know recently a friend of mine, and we told her not to do it. She changed jobs and took that money out and didn't transfer it and spent it, spent all of it, every dime.
Every penny. Well, that happens in more cases than not. And that happens due to, in most cases, the lack of education by us as financial professionals who are providers for these plans. You know, once again, when you look at your budgets, we go back to the budget format. When you look at the budgets and we fail to plan, when these opportunities, and I call them opportunities, but they're really not, to take access of some funds that you did not account for, you want to spend those. And you want to spend those to pay off bills, and you want to spend those for compulsive shopping. So what happens is, when you leave an employer, if you're not 59 and a half years of age, and a couple things are going to happen. If you're not 59 and a half years of age, there's a 10% early withdrawal penalty for every penny that you have taken, and they call it income, because it was put away as pre-tax, remember. You didn't pay taxes on it. So if she took that money and she spent that money, as you stated, it increases her taxable income. So let's say if her income level was $50,000 and she received $50,000, she went from one income tax bracket at 50 to $100,000.
When the tax man cometh,
yeah.
She gonna have to pay that bad boy,
because he is coming.
He is coming.
Not only are you gonna pay that income tax, you're gonna pay an early withdrawal penalty of 10%. So worst case scenario, you probably have a 30% taxable event because of the 10% early withdrawal penalty. Now, what if she spends the money and replaces the money in 59 days or on the 60th day? Because you have up to 60 days when you take control, you personally, of any type of qualified money like a 401k. Well, if you put the money back within 60 days, there are no tax implications for you. But in most cases, people, we can't afford to put that back
That's
in
right.
60 days. Because if we're spending it, that means we don't have it. So in her case, yes, she increased her taxable income liability, and she may have incurred a 10% early withdrawal penalty.
She did.
She's not 59 and a half years of age. So, you know, so once again, it gets back to the importance of planning. It gets back to the importance of planning for your budget, planning for your savings, as you stated. Savings is the emergency reserve savings, which is in a savings account. Then you get to your retirement savings, 401Ks, 401As, 403Bs, 457 plans, all these.
Or the pension plan, yeah. Or
right.
A supported pension plan.
And the beauty of a pension plan is you're not contributing. The employer's contributing. So if your employer's contributing, such as City of Atlanta employees, it would behoove you not to create your own plan, because they're already planning for you. But now you can close the gap, because pensions are great, but you're only going to get 70%, approximately 70% of your income.
Right.
So what happens to the other 30%? are you going to make sure, and once again, this gets back to your point of budgeting, and because you budget for post-retirement, and you budget for retirement. Are your expenditures going to decrease in retirement, or are they not? If they're not, was 70% efficient to fund your lifestyle at retirement? If not, it behooves you, if you have a pension, for you not to be contributing to an IRA, 457 plan, or something of that nature. That's a voluntary plan that you should be contributing to close that gap. And that's all part of the planning, from the budgeting to the savings to the compulsive spending, because in some cases, you know, if you start to look, you're compulsively spending, you know, $3,000, $2,000 a quarter on stuff.
On
you know,
stuff.
Just on stuff.
On stuff.
Now, think about that. If I'm spending, let's just take $2,000. I'm spending $2,000 a quarter on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's $8,000 a year. Okay. What if I only spent $4,000 a year on some stuff, and took the other $4,000 and saved it into some type of voluntary plan, my 457 plan, or my IRA if I'm, you know, if you have a pension. Mm-hmm. That closes your gap, and it helps you become more financially fit to be sustainable or sustained throughout your post-retirement as well as your retirement years.
We're going to have to wrap it up, but I thought it was interesting on one of the articles that said top 10 best countries to retire. And it seems like all of them are Hispanic places: Mexico, Ecuador, Panama, Costa Rica, Spain, Colombia, Portugal, Malta. Well, Thailand and Malaysia, of course, on the other side. But they talk about the low cost of living. You can live for $1,400 a month, including your rent and your utilities and everything. The doctor's visit is $10. Meals at the restaurant, $2.50. I mean, this was all for Ecuador, though. But most of them are the same way. They talk about the benefits for people over 65 in these other countries. That's an amazing thing. You know, United States should be on there, but of course, you know, it's not even close.
Yeah, we unfortunately, dear, we're probably not going to ever hit that.
We're not going to ever hit that.
We're not going to hit that list. And mm-hmm. I actually have some clients that have moved to Caribbean countries. Mm-hmm. And I have one client that actually went back to, call one of those Latin countries. But nevertheless, you're right. Cost of living is very inexpensive, but he was actually from there. So what happens, you know, obviously when you're planning for retirement, when you research it, the United States is one of the only countries that really put this huge emphasis on these extravagant lifestyles,
mm-hmm.
which is the reason we have such difficulty preparing and retiring. Other countries do not. They don't take, it doesn't appear that they, from the research that I've read over years, they take their work seriously, but their work isn't their life.
Right.
And for us, in most cases, it is our life.
They know how to play. They know how to rest.
They know how to play.
They know how to siesta. You know? They know how to rest.
So,
and we
yes,
don't.
That is true. I mean, a number of people have stated, you know, that are African Americans that grew up in this country have stated, I've heard it in my office at, you know, galas, et cetera, I'm going to explore the option of moving to another country, because it's far less expensive for me to live, and I can come back home and visit when I choose, but my lifestyle is a much better lifestyle living in some of these other countries.
Exactly. That's amazing, though.
I
think it would be exciting to retire and move to another country. That's exciting.
I think a lot of people feel that way,
mm-hmm.
clearly,
mm-hmm.
Because they have that conversation, and a number of them do, you know, but once again, you still have to prepare.
Oh, yeah.
But even, you know, some people that do not prepare, because, you know, in those countries, you know, they're earning far less in most cases.
Absolutely.
You're right. They're
Absolutely.
Earning far less. And some of them are not prepared either. So they're really struggling in that country or those countries, although the cost of living is much less, you know, expensive than in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, because of their inability to prepare for their retirement, they're struggling just as much, because they may not even come close to having the resources that you would have in this country. But if you are prepared in this country, your lifestyle is probably extravagant in those countries.
Exactly.
Because you're, you know.
That's what a lot of people do. And that's
pennies on the
dollar. I have friends that do that. Yeah, absolutely. We're going to have to wrap it up. Great conversation. How to retire with more money. And it all starts with our savings and budgeting. So we really got to, you know, get on that. It's a discipline. It's like you talk about that diet discipline. Money is a discipline as well. Cyrus, thank you so much for joining us. Tell folks how they can reach you.
Thank you, Twanda. They can reach me at chancock at Hancock Wealth, MGMT for management.com. That's chancock at Hancock Wealth, MGMT.com. Or you can call us at 770-217-0992, 770-217-0992. And the website is HancockWealthMGMT.com.
Thank you so much for joining us. Talk to you next month.
Thank you, Tawana, for having me.